Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, September the 20th, 2021. This is Air Force veteran David Corey. My usual co-host Richard Hurley was called away at the last moment, but he'll be back next week. We have a special guest this evening, John Rotter from the American Legion National Headquarters, so please stay tuned. First, though, I would like to remind our listeners that we are a call-in show, so you can let us know what's on your mind as far as veteran issues and if you have any questions for our special guest. Our nationwide toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, nationwide toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. We'd welcome your calls. Our special guest tonight, as I say, is John Rotter, the press secretary for the American Legion National Commander. He's a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. After his military service back in the 1980s, he earned a degree in political science at the University of Houston and a master's degree in journalism at the University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri. He also graduated from the Defense Information School's Journalism course, photojournalism course, and editor's course. He's previously served as the editor of the American Legion magazine, and in his long career, he has also worked as a senior writer with the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., as managing editor of the National Tribune Stars and Stripes, and as a daily newspaper reporter in Rosenberg, Texas. He has written more than 1,000 articles and has interviewed many government leaders and celebrities, including former President George W. Bush, Vice President Mike Pence, former Vice President Al Gore, Senator John McCain, former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge, former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, actor James Arness, the late Meet the Press host Tim Russert, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, heavyweight boxing champion George Foreman, entertainer Charles Daniels, and dozens of other celebrities and public officials. John spent February of 2007 embedded with Marine and U.S. Army units in Al-Anbar province in Iraq. He currently lives in Indianapolis with his family and is a member of American Legion Post 500 in Speedway, Indiana. So let's welcome John Rotter to the Veterans News Hour. Welcome, John. How's it going?
Going great. I appreciate you having me tonight.
Well, thanks. Thanks for being our guest. It's hard to believe it's been a year and a half already since last time you were on our show. A lot's happened. How's the American Legion dealing with this ongoing COVID pandemic?
Well, like the rest of the country, it's been quite a challenge. We heard the term shutdown a lot, but the American Legion didn't really shut down. We kind of stood up. A lot of the posts, they really mobilized. They turned themselves into relief centers. They raised personal protection equipment when it was in very short supply. Food pantries, virtual job fairs. They became testing sites, vaccination sites, telehealth. So the American Legion, we had to adapt, but we were still active and serving the communities.
Well, that's great. It sounds like the focus on the mission, getting the job done, persevered. And who knows how long this ongoing thing is going to continue. But it's great to hear that the Legion is doing all it's doing. Now, John, I know you know that the VA is focused on September as Suicide Prevention Month. I know the American Legion is actively involved in addressing that serious problem. Can you share with us more about that?
Well, even before pandemic, we were reaching out with buddy checks. And basically, it's just kind of the concept of veterans communicating with each other in and outside the American Legion. The American Legion is a great place to do that. But we were reaching out to veterans just to see how they're doing, calling them. And even if you didn't know the veteran, if you can hear of a veteran in your town, we were encouraging that. And with the pandemic, some of the veterans were feeling more isolated, especially if they were quarantining. Some of the elderly veterans were not able to get out as much. And sometimes it could be a lifeline, a buddy check, just calling up, how are you doing? Maybe the veteran was depressed and feeling, you know, all kinds of thoughts that we don't want to talk about. And that's why Suicide Prevention Month is so important. But regardless, whether it's September or any of the other 11 months, it is so important to get the assistance. Most of the veterans' suicides occur by people who are not seeking treatment within the VA. So if you can get that help and talk to your fellow veterans, we think that's extremely important. And we encourage people to if they even have the slightest feelings towards taking their own lives, or, you know, just want someone to talk to call the crisis hotline, which is 1-800-273-8255. And for veterans, you press 1. But again, just want to emphasize that number, 1-800-273-8255, extension 1.
John, that's great information. And as you said, you know, Suicide Prevention Month really is every month. It certainly can't just be one month. And also, I couldn't agree more about the importance of just sometimes reaching out, the difference that one phone call can make. And I've given out that crisis line number too. In fact, every week on this show at the end, we give out that number and also the VA's Coaching into Care program number, which is one for family members who are needing some advice or some coaching themselves on how they can get their loved one, a veteran who's going through a tough time, a crisis, into care. So there are a lot of resources, and it's great that everyone, including the Legion, is doing their part to help. Now, John, I know a big thing in the news over the last month, as you know, has been the end to the U.S. military presence in Afghanistan. And I imagine that there's been a lot of talk among the American Legion membership, a lot of thoughts about how that was handled, and as well as, again, stepping up to dealing with some of the fallout from that. Can you share with us your thoughts on the Legion's activities on that?
We were calling for quite some time now to bring home the or to process, quickly process, the visa applicants for the special immigrant visas for the Afghan interpreters, who in many cases saved the lives of the American troops they were serving alongside. I mean, the intel they provided was just extremely, extremely valuable. And by doing so, they risked not only their own lives, but the lives of their wives and, you know, their children, their spouses, to, you know, unspeakable torture, execution by the Taliban. We're trying to look ahead as well. I mean, what type of allies could we have in the future if they know in the end that we have a tendency to abandon them? So it's really important. And, of course, of paramount importance is to get the Americans out of Afghanistan. So even though we did believe that the war had gone on long enough, I mean, there were some, most of the Marines and the sailor and the soldier that who were recently killed in Afghanistan, most of them were infants during the 9/11 attacks. So an entire generation has basically grown up during the global war on terror. So we want Congress to look at the authorization for the use of military forces, which really had no end date on them. We certainly support any tools to eradicate terrorism by all means. We have to defend our homeland. But we are of the mindset that we have to encourage some of the countries to kind of stand up for themselves with their militaries instead of just endless reliance on us and to, you know, reexamine in the Constitution where Congress is to declare war, that is a very important important concept that we don't want to see overlooked.
Oh, I agree, and I think one similarity between the authorization to use force back in, I think, 2001, and also the Tonkin resolution in 1964 that was kind of the blank check which led to the eventual escalation in Vietnam, you have what seems to be Congress not stepping up to its obligations, it just seems to me. That's John, let me ask you about, you mentioned about all the interpreters in Afghanistan. You yourself were embedded with some units, Marine and Army units, in Al Anbar province in Iraq in 2007. Are there ongoing problems perhaps with some of our allies in Iraq that are trying to get out, also, you know, needing visa support?
It's going much slower than we had hoped. The numbers of the backlog, I got to give it to our military. They evacuated a great number from Afghanistan in the final days. But we're trying to look ahead to Iraq, that it doesn't come down to the final days. And there are undoubtedly some that were left behind in Afghanistan, as, you know, reports of Americans left behind. It is so important to take care of our allies, you know, and the SIV applicants have all been screened. I mean, they've been working side by side with our troops. they have been screened, and we're not opposed to further screening, but we got to get them to a safe place to do it. And, you know, as soon we've seen what happened in Afghanistan even before we left. So if we can use some of those hard-learned lessons and apply them to what is probably inevitable in the next year or two, and perhaps sooner in Iraq, to make it a lot more orderly, and to grant safe passage to the people who've really put their neck on the line in helping us with our missions.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and to me, it was just it was terrible to watch, you know, on the news and on the internet, just the way this whole withdrawal was conducted. As you said, you know, it certainly made sense that we needed to leave. We probably shouldn't have stayed there for 20 years. Some even argued that we should not have conducted ourselves the war the way we did. We should have taken a more targeted approach to get Bin Laden sooner, instead of relying on the manner in which we did that's allowed him to escape. But in any event, you know, giving up Bagram Air Base, leaving in the middle of the night the way we did, and then not having that as a place that could been the place of evacuation, you know, to me it was just a total screw up. But any event, any other thoughts on that before we move on to some of the other programs that the Legion has? Any other thoughts on Afghanistan, John?
Well, just I encourage all my fellow veterans to reach out to the Afghanistan veterans. Vietnam occurred before my time, but I've talked to enough Vietnam veterans to know that what they saw in Afghanistan did stir up a lot of memories of when they, you know, the fall of Saigon. And it's just that we just have to remind these veterans, their service is not in vain. It was, as you pointed out, Bin Laden, we got him. You know, he was gotten in Pakistan, but perhaps that would not have been it probably would not have been possible without the service that occurred before that in Afghanistan, without our presence there. So they did accomplish the mission. They did get the architects of 9/11. And their service for 20 years, the people of Afghanistan did have a better life while the Americans were there. And we just got to support the diplomatic efforts and do what we can and hold our government's feet to the fire to ensure that we don't have another 9/11, and that, you know, to keep the Taliban in check and the worst excesses of that regime. To ensure that we can help as many people as possible.
Exactly. I agree 100%. John, I know the American Legion has many, many programs. The Legion's website discusses many of them. But I wanted to, if you have a little time this evening, share with us some highlights of those programs, and particularly some of the Legion's other priorities over the upcoming year.
One of the programs we're particularly proud of, it has just been rebranded about a year ago under a different name. It's called the Veterans and Children's Foundation. And people may have known it before. We had something called Temporary Financial Assistance. And I'd like you to recall about 2 years ago when the federal government shut down.
Yep.
And the U.S. Coast Guard was not paid. Their payment was interrupted.
Oh, right. Yes.
This program, and now, unlike the other branches of the military, they were paid because they fell under the Department of Defense, and the Coast Guard was under the Department of Homeland Security, and, you know, Congress wisely ensures that our Defense Department is funded early enough so when there's a shutdown, the main operations can continue, at least for a short, you know, interim period. But the Coast Guard was not funded. And for a month and a half, the longest federal government shutdown in history, these Coast Guard families were not being paid. So this program of ours stepped up, and we paid over $1 million in grants to Coast Guard families in need. Coast Guard families with children at home that suddenly had their, you know, weren't receiving a paycheck, even though they were still working full time, going out in the seas, you know, intercepting drug traffickers, taking risks, you know, working through storms, rescuing people. They were still doing a fantastic job, but they were not getting a paycheck. We provided over $1 million of direct assistance to these families in non-repayable grants. Eventually they were paid when the government reopened, but that uncertainty, you know, of not knowing how you're going to make your car payment, how you're going to not make your mortgage payment, is very real. So we've been working on lobbying Congress, and they still have not passed the Pay Our Coast Guard Act to ensure that they are funded far enough in advance that, you know, if there's a future government shutdown, and that is always a possibility, that they will be paid. So we have our Veterans and Children's Foundation, which basically awards grants to Legion family members and active duty members who have young minor children at home and run into financial hardships such as that. It also goes towards training our service officers, which assists veterans, regardless of whether they're a Legionnaire or not, with obtaining benefits that they've earned through their military service. And they help these veterans, like, free of charge. There's about 3,500 service officers accredited through the American Legion working in all 50 states across the country. So this is a program that we're very proud of.
That's an awesome program. Now, can listeners and others contribute financially to help this program or contribute in some other way?
Absolutely. If they go to legion.org, that's www.legion.org, the homepage will be right there, and there's a donate button prominently on there, and they can not just give to that program. We have many other outstanding programs. We have our National Emergency Fund, which provides assistance to victims of natural disasters. You know, we just seen Hurricane Ida and the damage that can do, wildfires, earthquakes. We have some tremendous programs. We have Operation Comfort Warriors, which provides assistance for wounded, injured, or ill veterans and troops. And most of the stuff that OCW, Operation Comfort Warriors, provides are things the government doesn't usually provide. As I like to say, the fun stuff, you know, like concert tickets or sporting events or entertainment, video games perhaps. These are things that, you know, the government isn't going to buy them, but we feel, you know, it's just a small token of our appreciation to, you know, give them a night out on, you know, at a concert or something, or an amusement park. I know they sponsor outings at Six Flags in San Antonio often for the not only the wounded veterans from the Intrepid, but also for the their caregivers and their family members.
Wow, that's a great program, and it reminds me of when I was stationed overseas. It's receiving at the unit's so-called care packages from stateside, from different groups, and I imagine the American Legion participates currently with those as well, right? The in sending things to deploy troops.
We do, and the American Legion posts, and we're basically a grassroots organization. We start in a community, and we have more than 12,000 American Legion posts and auxiliary units and Sons of the American Legion squadrons, and they undergo their own programs as well, you know, that I can't even keep track of because there's so many of them and thousands of them. And a lot of them personally, you know, send packages to troops in their community, you know, that they may know in their communities. So it is really important. I still hear from a lot of our Vietnam veterans and people who served earlier than that, you know, say how much a letter or a care package meant to them when they were overseas.
Oh, absolutely. Now, John, the programs you described are very impressive. I know that there's many other programs that the Legion is sponsoring or hosting at the national level, but also, as you say, the 12,000 local groups. Any other ones that you'd like to highlight for us?
Well, one is particularly, it's not really a program, it's an event, and it's coming up Wednesday on September 22nd. We have another virtual job fair. It's really a hybrid. If you happen to be in Austin, Texas, you can go in person. But this is to find opportunities. It's a career fair for not just active duty military who may be transitioning out, you know, as we used to say, short-timers, but also for veterans, for their spouses. As you know, when a military member changes duty station, oftentimes the spouse has to give up his or her career as well and start over, you know, and find employment. So these virtual job fairs have been, and this is something, it's really gone virtual since COVID, even though there is an in-person component to it if you're in Austin on the 22nd. The virtual thing, you know, when we started doing that during COVID, we had people who were stationed in Europe that were able to attend these job fairs that before could not do so.
Wow.
So
wow.
We've gotten some tremendous, I know that my number one priority when I was leaving the Marine Corps, I was thinking, what am I going to do next? Where am I going to go to school? Or what am I going to work? You know, what job opportunities are out there? So I really think this is a great opportunity. It starts at 10 a.m. Central on September 22nd. But I encourage everybody to, if you're interested in attending, go to legion.org. It is on the homepage on how you can register. So you can register right now, whether you're an employer or a job seeker. You go there and register, and you can participate.
Wow, that's great.
Wow,
and I hope our listeners will take advantage of that. Our guest last week was with a state of Florida organization called Veterans Florida, and their big focus, they were created by the Florida State Legislature. They're separate from the Florida Department of Veteran Affairs, but their whole focus is jobs, entrepreneurship, connecting employers with people that are separating and veterans, and also to help them start jobs. So anytime there's a job fair like this, I think that's a great opportunity for veterans. Like you say, John, a big thing is, you know, making that sometimes tough transition from active duty to civilian life, and a job is so important to that. Any other projects? You all had a convention earlier this year, didn't you, John? How did that go?
We just did a couple of weeks ago, and last year, regrettably, we had to cancel the convention because of COVID, and this year we met in Phoenix. We had we heard from the VA secretary. We heard from just a great lineup of guests, and we got to we elected a brand new national commander, Paul Dillard of Texas, He is a Vietnam War veteran, and he is very committed to helping veterans. His theme for the year is No Veteran Left Behind, and that just reaches into to so many possibilities of how we can help veterans, you know, as we just discussed, the job fairs, and just helping the people, not just from Afghanistan, but anybody getting out of them or getting out of the military today, helping them transition back into society, and giving them the welcome home that the Vietnam veterans didn't get at first.
Right. John, what's your impression with, you know, every 2 or 3 years or so we go through a change at the top of the VA, a new VA secretary and other any other leaderships, positions up there in Washington, D.C. Any thoughts, impressions, observations that you can share with us, perhaps, you know, unique to the American Legion's standing, you know, in the United States? Anything at all you want to share with us on that?
Well, the VA is a cabinet-level status that I believe it gained that in 1989, thanks to a lot of lobbying by the American Legion, because prior to that it was the Veterans Administration. It did not have a secretary of the vet, you know, it had a director. But as you did point out, it's they've had some turnover for VA secretaries. Though an administration is 4 years long, oftentimes VA secretaries don't serve an entire 4 years. But we've had some good leaders over the years. When we disagree strongly. But right now, our belief is that the VA does provide excellent care. Our issues are mostly access. And, you know, if you can get that VA care and get it in a timely manner, it's usually very good. So, and that's where the service officers come in for the American Legion, is trying to help people have that access. And we're always going to be fighting for the VA to treat veterans appropriately, to serve veterans basically as well as veterans that serve this country.
Well, that's a great point, John, and I've always been impressed with American Legion's veteran service officers. They do a great job, and I'm so glad that they're there. They help keep the VA honest, you know, on the claims side. And I know one thing that we were covering on this show back about 4 years ago, you know, when the Appeals Modernization Act was going through Congress, and there was a lot of concern, you know, was it going to be a overall plus for veterans? My impression has been that the VA, particularly the Board of Veteran Appeals, has really stepped up to the plate and been vastly improved. Mm-hmm. You know, in the last couple years, I think we can thank the chairwoman of the board, Cheryl Mason, I believe is her name. The whole positive approach they've taken. They've added a lot of judges. During the pandemic time frame, they've really taken the idea of these virtual BVA hearings to the max. I think it's doing a great job. Any thoughts or impressions that you can share with us, John, maybe that you've picked up from, you know, the convention, what people's observations were on that?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the appeals process, because when I first came to the American Legion and back when I really didn't know, wasn't as familiar with veterans' issues as I should have been, I thought of appeals as kind of like a criminal appeal, like a fat chance. You know, you hardly ever hear of many criminals winning on appeal. It happens, but not rare, you know, but it's rare.
Right.
I want to emphasize to all veterans, it's not the same. Don't take no for an answer. Our service officers have a remarkable record, and even those who don't use the service officers, you do get a lot of appeals reversed by VA. You know, so just because the claim comes back denied the first time, by all means appeal it. It is not a long shot. The majority of the appeals that our service officers handle are successful. So it's just like you said, it is. The Board of Veterans Appeals is doing a phenomenal job, the backlogs are large. The COVID back the COVID situation, the pandemic, has caused a little bit of, you know, of a backlog. It certainly affected personnel in every industry, but
right.
we're believing that, you know, it is better than where we were a year ago.
Yeah. And my observations are that the board, they started using these virtual hearings. By virtual hearings, I probably need to clarify. You know, they've had these video appeals from the regional mm-hmm. offices for years, but in about the 6 months or so before the pandemic hit, and maybe a little longer, the board had started offering by virtual hearings, I mean, where a veteran could do the hearing from his or her own home, their own personal computer. They didn't even have to travel to a regional office, which for a lot of the veterans I help is a really big deal. I'm in the state of Florida, and, you know, the regional office for the state of Florida is in St. Petersburg, which is the west central part of the state. Well, Florida is a pretty big state, and for veterans that didn't live anywhere near St. Pete, they'd often have to make a long trip the day before, stay in a hotel, which cost them money, and then, you know, be there most of the day waiting for their hearing or having their hearing and then having to drive home. But these virtual hearings now, where they can do it from their own home. I even had a veteran that I was helping. He was living out of his RV. He was, like, somewhat homeless. And he did the hearing off of his phone, his smartphone. He didn't even have a computer. So it was, but that's what I meant, that these new virtual hearings, just so much more convenient. And, you know, when the Appeals Modernization Act was going through Congress, I had concerns about it. But a lot of those concerns have been allayed by the fact that I think the board has really stepped up and been doing a remarkable job. And I applaud the American Legion in its role, because I know it's a big advocate for fixing things, and they have been for many years. So, John.
We fought hard for the appeals modernization. In fact, President Trump signed that on the stage of our convention several years ago in Reno, Nevada. So it is something that we're very happy to see, you know, passed. It's funny, you talked about the virtual hearings. 2 years ago, most people, not myself included, never heard of Zoom. I mean, just one of the few good things that come out of the pandemic is the fact that we have this more user-friendly virtual world now that does make things a little bit, like you said, the appeals process a little bit easier. The, you know, just as we just discussed, the job fairs. And there are things, because some people just don't have the ability to travel as much. And then, you know, telehealth is another thing that the Legion has been very, very supportive of. And we have American Legion posts now that have opened their doors that have gotten the equipment and stuff, and they are, you know, their sites for VA telehealth appointments. So there are some, you know, technology is our friend in many ways. In many ways it isn't, but, you know, this is a good thing that can really make a difference in the lives of so many veterans.
Oh, absolutely. John, I know there's a lot of veterans out there that are already American Legion members. For those that are not yet members, what can they do to join, and really what's the process to join?
Well, there's a number of ways. The simplest way at home right now would be just go to legion.org. I think the best way would be to visit your local American Legion post because, you know, legion.org, we can get you into the national organization, but there's nothing like that local involvement in the community where, you know, Florida is home to so many great American Legion posts in just about every community in Florida. In fact, there's twice as many American Legion posts in this country as there are Walmarts. So,
wow.
I mean, we are quite a few places. But we had a change in our membership. You know, people used to ask, well, I served after Vietnam in the late 70s. Can I join? And the answer used to be no, because we were chartered as a wartime veterans organization. And I wasn't being flip when I told people, well, you know, it would literally take an act of Congress to change that. And it did. You know, In 2019, Congress passed the Legion Act to change our charter. President Trump signed it. And basically, we are now open to any honorably discharged veteran or active duty member who has served since December 7th, 1941. They didn't change our charter as a wartime veterans organization. We are still that. But our position is that we have been in a state of war since December 7th, 1941, because the previous periods in which, you know, we didn't consider wartime, or at least the government didn't, we kind of looked at the data, and there were about 1,600 military service members who were killed in covert operations or in smaller, you know, contingency missions that were not really considered wartime, you know, considered war. But so, you know, our position is the Cold War, for instance, you know, there were a lot of things that occurred then that didn't make the headlines of an Afghanistan or an Iraq, you know, mission, but they were still very real, and people took a risk and were wounded and died. So, and, you know, that is the rationale behind it. But now anybody, you know, who has served basically since the Pearl Harbor is eligible for membership in the American Legion. And that includes our auxiliary unit. You know, if you're a spouse of someone who served, or if you're sons of the American Legion, if they're eligible, having served since Pearl Harbor Day on to the current, they are now eligible for the American Legion family.
Oh, that's great. And as you say, they can go to legion.org and then from there find their local post or their state department of the Legion, right? That's how easy it is.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And, John, I know there's a lot of very practical benefits to joining the Legion, and in addition to supporting all the projects, staying connected with other veterans, but also the Legion members often get discounts from various companies and industries, right? So there's lots of practical reasons as well.
There are. We do have a members benefit program, and that is also on the website with various vendors. One thing we're proud of, too, if anyone's a race fan, we have an American Legion race team with Jimmy Johnson, who is racing in IndyCar Series. He and Tony Kanaan, who won the Indianapolis 500, I believe, in 2012, they are racing the American Legion number 48 car. So we're very proud, and they've been bringing all kinds of attention to the issue of veteran suicide and our Veterans and Children's Foundation. The more attention we can give to these issues, you know, we just welcome that and their efforts to introduce the American Legion to a whole new generation of race fans.
Oh, very good. Well, thanks. Thanks, John, for highlighting all those things for us. Thank you for being our guest. Before we go, anything that maybe I've forgotten to ask you but that you wanted to share with us?
Well, you know, we talked a lot about veterans issues and our work in Washington, which is great, and the work of our American Legion post. We also have some great youth programs. Boys State, Boys Nation, and the auxiliary has Girls State and Girls Nation, American Legion Baseball. So, I mean, we really are a family organization, and we award millions of dollars of scholarships every year to talented young people. We have oratorical contests, which is young people giving speeches about the Constitution. We've had, you know, senators and governors. President Clinton went through our Boys Nation program. We've had Vice President Pence won our oratorical contest for the state of Indiana when he was in high school. So we really have, and I know Vice President Dick Cheney had gone through our Boys Nation program as well. So we really, the basketball player, Michael Jordan, you know, he went to North Carolina Boys State, Bruce Springsteen. I could just go on and on. But so we really have some outstanding youth programs. There's something for everybody in the American Legion family.
Well, that's awesome. And when you mentioned former President Clinton, it reminded me of that photograph that was often publicized of of Bill Clinton when he was about 16 years old, and I think it was because of the program that you mentioned. He met President Kennedy at the Rose Garden. Is that right?
He did. That was President Clinton was then Senator from Arkansas, Clinton, through our Boys Nation Senator, that is.
Uh-huh.
And President Kennedy was a proud Legionnaire from a post in Boston. So they we had that Legion connection that we're very proud of.
Oh, very good. That's awesome. So, well, John, thank you so much for being our guest this evening, and thank you for all your work and all the great work of the American Legion nationally and at every post throughout the country on behalf of veterans and their families. And we hope that you'll return to our show from time to time in the future to keep us updated.
Absolutely. It's really been a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again, John, and best of luck.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Take care. Well, thanks again to our special guest, John Rotter from the American Legion National Headquarters. He talked about many of the great programs and projects. And again, for more information, go to the American Legion's website, which is legion.org. I think you'll be impressed with that. So we've just got a few more minutes left in the show tonight. I wanted to cover some important news that will be of interest to many veterans and their families. The first item of news we have, courtesy of the National Veterans Legal Services Program, website nvlsp.org, an outstanding advocate organization based in Washington, D.C. In a September 2nd, 2021 press release, the National Veterans Legal Services Program announced breaking news about a federal court order that was ordering the VA to provide more transparency of its decisions and payments to thousands of veterans who are entitled to VA reimbursement of emergency medical expenses. The background to this story was that, as many veterans know, even veterans entitled to medical care in the VA system, that in times during situations where they sought emergency medical care in non-VA facilities, that the VA was not following its own rules, its own regulations, for the reimbursement of these veterans' out-of-pocket expenses, which added up to tens of thousands of veterans being affected by this, or in some situations they projected to be hundreds of thousands of veterans, and the reimbursements to be in the billions of dollars. So on September 1st, just a few weeks ago, the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims ordered the VA to provide additional measures of transparency in its ongoing re-adjudications and payments to tens of thousands of veterans entitled to reimbursement of these emergency medical expenses. It's based on a class action lawsuit that the National Veterans Legal Services Program and pro bono counsel at the law firm of Sidley Austin, LLP. They're working together as counsel for this class of veterans. So this will affect tens of thousands of veterans and their families who up until now have had to basically cover these expenses out of pocket, even though the VA should have been paying for these. So stay tuned for more information on this. It's been the subject of ongoing litigation and appeals over the last few years. And based on the VA's past estimate, compliance with the court's decision will likely require the VA to pay anywhere between $1.8 billion and $6.5 billion in reimbursements over time to hundreds of thousands of veterans who have filed or who are projected to file reimbursement claims during a 10-year period from 2016, looking forward the next few years to 2025. So it's an important issue that has financial consequences to many veterans and their families. And if you want more information about this, it's called the Class Action Lawsuit of Wolf, that's W-O-L-F-E versus McDonough, Secretary of the VA. And you can go to the National Veterans Legal Services Program, nvlsp.org website. For more information about that, I'm sure this story will continue to develop as the VA attempts to, hopefully they will, comply with these court orders to speed up reimbursement. So it's a big issue that we'll continue to follow. Now, in other news, as we've reported periodically over the last several months, earlier this year, the VA added three additional conditions to the list of illnesses it acknowledges were caused by Agent Orange exposure in Southeast Asia. So this is important news for Vietnam veterans. The VA added three new conditions, bladder cancer, Parkinsonism, and hypothyroidism, to the list of those presumptive service-connected disabilities related to Agent Orange exposure. Now, the VA will review and pay retroactive benefits to veterans and survivors whose VA disability and death benefit claims for these three diseases were previously denied without requiring them to refile their claims. That's what they're supposed to be doing. Now, the VA announced in a press release back in May that it will begin implementing the provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act for the fiscal year 2021, which added these three conditions, again, bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinsonism, to the list of presumptively associated conditions due to herbicide agents, commonly known as Agent Orange. VA Secretary Dennis McDonough said in a press release, quote, "Many of our nation's veterans have waited a long time for these benefits. VA will not make them wait any longer. This is absolutely the right thing to do for veterans and their families." Now, the VA said that it will apply the provisions of court orders related to the class action suit of Niemer versus United States Department of Veteran Affairs, which may result in an earlier date for entitlement to benefits for veterans who served in Vietnam during that war. Vietnam War veterans and their survivors who previously filed and were denied benefits should have their cases automatically reviewed, again, without the need to refile. However, we all know how things work in reality. So if you're a Vietnam veteran or you're the survivor of a Vietnam veteran and you think that your situation is affected by the change here, I encourage you to be proactive. Check with a veteran service officer that can assist you in making sure that the case isn't overlooked, doesn't slip through the cracks, because it is important. It can result in significant financial compensation. So in other news that I wanted to mention, the VA has also announced that it will begin processing disability claims, it did starting in August, for asthma, rhinitis, and sinusitis on a presumptive basis based on presumed particulate matter exposures during military service in Southwest Asia and certain other areas, if those conditions manifest within 10 years of a qualifying period of service. We've covered on this show for the last 4 years the issue of environmental contamination due to open-air burn pits, but other causes as well, particularly those deployed in the Southwest Asia area, Iraq, and some of the surrounding countries, as well as Afghanistan. And so this is an important change in the rules. It's very important for veterans that have served in that area of the world. Again, those three conditions are asthma, rhinitis, and sinusitis. Those will be considered service-connected on a presumptive basis due to presumed particulate matter exposure. We'll see what happens after this, because, as I say, it's an issue that is not over just because of this this change in the rules, because there's a lot of veterans that have suffered from many other types of conditions in addition to those three, some of involving fatal cancers and other fatal respiratory diseases. So we'll continue to follow this issue, and hopefully it won't take as long as the Agent Orange issue did for Vietnam veterans for the VA to wrap up their studies, because that's basically what they're doing now. If you want more information about some of these studies that pertain to the health consequences of exposure to all sorts of airborne hazards and pollutants, you can go to the VA's website, which is publichealth.va.gov. publichealth.va.gov, and look for the information on airborne hazards. You'll learn a lot of what the VA has been doing so far But unfortunately, the issue's not been totally resolved. There are a lot of veterans that have had their claims denied, and the position of many veteran groups, veteran advocates, is that the VA needs to expand its list of presumptive service-connected disabilities so that these veterans can receive both the VA medical care that they deserve, but also disability compensation for their conditions. Now, the VA has said that they will conduct outreach to affected veterans and survivors to inform them about the eligibility for the recent changes. And I know from personal experience from some veterans that I help, the VA has been sending out those letters, but you never know. If you think that you fall into these categories, reach out, be proactive, and reach out to the VA, either directly or through a veteran service officer. And as I say, you can monitor that publichealth.va.gov, and you can also sign up for the registry that the VA has for monitoring those illnesses and to learn more and to be basically on their contact list. So we're about running out of time tonight. If you have any questions before we go, again, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. Before we go, I do want to, though, also mention our weekly reminder to a very important program. As our guest, John Rotter, had mentioned, the American Legion has many programs, one of which has been working on suicide prevention. The VA did announce earlier this month that September is Suicide Prevention Month, and they have very significant programs and invested a lot of resources to address this this tragic issue. And the VA website, va.gov, has a lot of information. They have a lot of information also on where you can get help, where you can get treatment. And one of the websites is easy to remember. It's reach.gov, reach.gov/SPM. And they also have links to resources and how to find resources in your area to deal with things like substance abuse or mental health issues. And that website is very simple. It's findtreatment.samhsa.gov. And that's the website sponsored by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, Behavioral Treatment Services. And that website is very useful. You can search by zip code to find local treatment facilities to focus on substance abuse, addiction issues, or mental health issues. Again, that website is findtreatment.samhsa.gov. All right, we're about ready to wrap up for tonight. Want to give you our weekly reminder on the Coaching Into Care program. It's a VA program that offers free coaching to help family members help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, the Veterans Crisis Line is a 24/7 operation to help a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind. The Veteran Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Again, the Veterans Crisis Line, it's there to help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. Thank you for joining us tonight. And we hope you'll join us next week. Our guest will be the head of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. We'd like to thank our show sponsor, Corey and Hurley Law Group, and thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time, bbsradio.com, Station 1. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.